Hi there, this is Rocky, and it's been my pleasure to host a Server's Journey podcast over the past 3 years. Recently, Larry and I have taken a short hiatus to reimagine what the future holds for this podcast. So we ask that you join us in the fall as we start a new season with fresh content. In the meantime, we reviewed some of the past episodes, and we found a few that we think you might be needing to hear. As always, we thank you for listening so regularly, and we need you now more than ever. So we ask that you please reach out on our social media, let us know the things you want us to talk about, and as always, like us, subscribe, leave us reviews, and share with your friends. So Larry, crank up this episode and let us know how it affected your journey of serving.
Okay, we're going to open up the toolbox again with Mike and Rocky.
Hey, how you doing, Larry, today?
I'm doing fantastic.
Mike, how about you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks.
So we've been kind of starting a new series here, one that we're pretty excited about. And in previous episodes, we've kind of talked a little bit about more of a theoretical why. You know, you have to have a reason. We talked a lot about Apple and a lot of other great companies, actually. In fact, it was a two-parter where the first part was the theoretical, and then the second part, we discussed companies that we loved, and we weren't always sure why we loved them. You know, and Larry played a whole lot of commercials that some of which were tearjerkers.
Right, but they were brand identifiers.
That's right, yeah.
The reason why you'd want to identify with them.
Yeah, and so like one was Subaru, because they stopped selling cars. And they're really selling these
love.
Yeah.
And, you know, their commercials are well done, and they've made us care about. And I shared that I have never owned a Subaru, but I'm a huge fan. And my daughter, I'm such a fan that when my daughter came to buy her first car, she bought a Subaru.
Yep. Good cars. Great cars.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, again, yeah. See. All right, so today, what I wanted to do is we're gonna continue on the why, but I'm gonna engage Larry and Mike into a conversation on more of the practical.
Finally, yes. We get down to some practical stuff. Yeah,
and I think the next 13 shows or so, we're gonna have a lot more practical of, okay, this sounds pretty. Now, how do you go about doing it? And in particular, if you're not a servant leader, or if you're struggling to be a servant leader, how do you go about becoming one? And I know, Mike, we've heard your story, and we know that you had a pretty good path to maybe not being a servant leader to becoming a much more servant leader.
Absolutely. I'm shaking my head. Yes. servant leader was not anywhere in my purview.
Okay.
Until I had my awakening.
That's right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about why it works. And let me start by saying, we don't see this only as a business application. It does work in companies. And if you're the CEO of a corporate, you know, Fortune 500 company, it definitely works. But if you're a mom and pop business, it works. If you're a husband trying to be a better husband, it works. If you're a father trying to be a better father, it works. If you're coaching a softball team or a bowling team or anything that you're doing with people, this works and it helps. So, Mike, I know that you've got kind of a condition, because we know that we all want to become servant leaders. We know that it does work, but you always talk about something that has to happen before.
Absolutely right. You have to make a decision that it's going to be hard work to do this.
Right.
And unless you're prepared to do the work, to personally avail yourself, to put your agenda in the top drawer and make the agenda someone else's, not yours, you'll never succeed. And it's hard work, and most people won't do the heavy lifting that's required to really embrace and do this. But if you do, the flywheel effect takes on, the spinning and the team comes together and people grow and they join you. Some don't. They think it's a gimmick and they don't believe it. And
right.
But well you said this is work. What do you mean by work?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm going to jump a little bit in here, because so since January 1st, I've decided I want to begin to be more healthy again. And at one point I was very healthy and had lost a lot of weight, but put it back on some during Christmas and over the last several years. And so since January 1, I've been in my mind putting in the work to begin to lose weight and get more healthier. However, I haven't done the work.
Correct.
And so nothing's happened. Nothing has changed in my life. I can think about it. I can think of the theoretically the reasons why I should get in shape, but until I begin to run or eat better or work out, do any of those things, it doesn't matter. It's not going to actually work. And right now, so far, I have not been willing to put the hard work in.
Absolutely. Well, it's a conscious decision of your mind as a leader to say, I am going to change this. You have to change your paradigm. You have to change your focus. And when you do that, what happens is you begin to value people. You see people differently.
Right.
And then you begin to embrace them. And when they come up to you, you don't frown, you smile. People right. know when you see them, do they smile? Are you, oh, hey, it's good to see you, versus, oh, boy.
Right. It matters.
Right. And there's an aroma you give off. It's such a positive effect, but you've got to consciously make a decision. Yeah. I'm going to do this.
And it's going to be work. And you have to understand in the beginning, it is work.
Yes.
There's a great quote by John Maxwell, and he's been around for a long time.
I love
Maxwell.
Been great. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And one of my favorite quotes, and he says, true leadership must be for the benefit of the followers, not to enrich the leader. And let me tell you what, if you think about those words, Mike's 100% right. So the first pre-thought is get ready. It is going to be work. Steel yourself. Make the decision to do the hard work. But if you do, and it's not just lip service, then the end result of this is it builds trust. And the reason why being a servant leader works is because you build trust. And when you build trust, people work harder, people become more efficient, people begin to believe that you're somebody to follow.
Absolutely.
And we talk about that a lot.
Right. And you think about one of the earlier episodes, it's okay to fail. Because when people trust you, they know, hey, let's try this. And if it doesn't work, what's the worst that could happen?
That's right.
So trust begins to make that flywheel spin more.
That's right. Yep.
And as a leader, you better get on a seatbelt and a crash helmet because it's going to be a wild ride.
That's right, yeah.
But if you're successful, and most times you are, the benefits just...
Yeah.
Well, what happens is every day you wake up and you go to bed early because you want to get up early because you want to get in and be with your team and accomplish these things.
Well, and so I love this. I think you're right, Mike, in that, okay, get ready, put in the work. If you do put in the work... Normally, and it might take a year, it might take 6 months. It doesn't just happen overnight. It doesn't, you decide it and then it works. There's effort. But if you do it, eventually you build trust. Now, the second thing I'm going to warn people, it's kind of another part because we do believe that being a servant leader works. But if you're unwilling to do the hard work, then I think Mike and I would both caution you that you need to look at your heart.
Absolutely.
Because your heart is really the motivator of you. And if you're unwilling to do the hard work, then there's an issue there. It's just an issue with your heart. And we're going to actually cover that in another episode where we really go into depth about your heart. But Mike, would you agree with that? That you do the work, and if you won't do the work, then you need to sit back. And you talk about getting a heart transplant.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what happened to me in 1980. It took 2 years. But I can tell you, if you have to remember this, you'll blow it. Or you'll go, no, I don't want to do this. That's okay. Just do the next right thing tomorrow.
Right.
Or this afternoon. It's okay. Just do the next right thing. It's like you want to eat healthier.
Right.
And so you blow it. You have a milkshake.
Yeah.
Okay. That's okay. So tomorrow, don't have it.
Right.
And, you know, this doesn't happen overnight. You know, I would say that anybody that even thinks they want to do this, you have to go on like a 90-day march,
right?
3 months. And it takes almost that long to develop new habits.
Yeah.
And people won't believe you. Yeah. Oh, yeah, right, sure. But
now I understand, Mike, you came into companies that were kind of dysfunctional. And what were some of the things that you worked on to work with people to get this working?
Well, first, I think what you really have to do is understand the big picture. And I like to grow companies. I like to grow teams. I like to win. And so I've said before, I'm a capitalist. And so, you know, the world I worked in was you had to make money. Yeah, that was kind of the scorecard.
Yeah.
So I think what you have to do is look at the culture. And what I find in many organizations, not just businesses, but churches and teams, is there's, again, lack of trust. There's triangulation. For example, I have a problem with Larry, but I'd go to Rocky.
Right.
And I'd say, Rocky, wow, did you know Larry? And so you've got to collapse triangulation. And then what you've got to do is begin to catch people doing things right, get that positive outlook, and then nip it if somebody starts, being negative.
Yeah, and all those, I think, Mike, they have to go back to what you're saying about when you put in the work, you begin to build the trust. When you once you fix your heart, the second thing that happens, and it's a real joy, is the reason why you begin to want to break down this triangulation is suddenly your same team looks different to you. I mean, you really begin in some ways, and I've seen this happen to me in real life, you begin to fall in love with people that were on your team that you may even have thought were underachievers or this guy's a loser, but you begin to see him in a different light when they catch the vision and begin to trust you as a leader, and when you fix your heart, and then a team that you might not have thought was good enough 2 years before or a year before suddenly can achieve some amazing things.
That's so true.
Yeah. There have been some football teams with that kind of an attitude lately, right?
Yeah. Let me tell you what, sports is a great analogy for life for so many of us. But, I can tell you, and we can go to, LSU versus Clemson was just played. You can use tons and tons of example from that game. But the team that I like to talk about a lot as far as this, where a team that didn't seem that good achieved something amazing is the 2002 Ohio State Buckeyes. And they had really, they were a team of 1- and 2-star athletes. They were mostly in-state. Their quarterback wasn't really a quarterback. He was actually a medical student who's now a doctor, who really had a very weak arm and could not run. And his throwing motion, could be described as like a stork throwing a football. He was not an athlete by any stretch. And they were full of people like that. But they had a coach, Jim Tressel, who did the work. He did the old, adage where he said, guys, this is a football. Here's how you hold it. Here's how you lace your shoes so that you when you cut, you don't slip. And, he did all the hard work with these 1- and 2-stars. And at the start of the season, they were barely winning. They were escaping games, 13-12. But they started gaining energy, and they never looked great, but they never lost. And they ended up going undefeated. And then they played this team who was coming. First of all, they had won. They had, I think it was 36 straight games they had won. They were fresh off winning the national championship in 2001. They had, that year, 2002, they had more NFL players drafted than any really five teams combined. They were the 2002 Miami Hurricanes. And when you look at their lineup, they are future Hall of Famers, and they were all stars. Their team was all 5-stars. And yet this team of 1- and 2-stars that were unathletic beat them for the national championship, not because they were better athletes, but because they were a better team. And they were a better team because they trusted each other. They believed the coach, and the coach saw something in them that other people didn't, and they won this you know, coveted prize. And nobody will ever say, in fact, it's funny, the 2002 Buckeyes will never be called the greatest team ever. But in a lot of ways, they were, because they came together and bought a vision, you know. So it's exciting when you turn that corner. And Mike, you said it took 2 years for you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Every bit of 2 years.
Yeah. And it's not longer, always that long, but sometimes it takes longer, you know.
Well, you have to have the long view. And look at Jesus. I mean, the disciples, they were fishermen and, you know, and he was a carpenter. I mean, think about it.
Right.
You know, so.
That's a great example because.
It's true.
You know, and in the Bible actually says that God uses the foolish to confound the wise.
Yep.
He took fishermen, not rabbis.
Sure.
So, okay. So we like this. So we do believe that it takes work, but work breeds trust. And then we believe that your heart has to be fixed. But if you fix your heart, then you begin to realize how great your talent really is.
Sure.
And then there's another part, Mike. And you've mentioned this. So when you began to change, did you do it alone?
No. Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, I had quite a few people come alongside me,
right,
and encourage me. And when I'd kind of lose heart, they'd, you know, say to me, you know, Mike, you're really doing this well, and you just have to do the next right thing. And I'd go, well, you know, so-and-so disappointed me. And I'm thinking of one time. And they said, yeah, but think about all the good things this person's done. That's true. Okay, yeah, that's a good point. So you've got to have some mentors or some people that see a bigger picture. I think that one of the biggest things for me was I would look at people in the past and go, huh. And then when I had my awakening, I began to look at people and go, wow, you are wonderfully made.
Yeah.
What's your skill set? What are you really good at? What do you love doing? And you only figure that out is by hanging out with them, by being with them.
That's right.
And then you discover it, and it's like the aha moment.
Yeah.
And then you put them in that role, and you praise them, and you knock down the roadblocks, and you train them, and you give them the tools, and you coach them, and you help them. And wow, life gets sweet.
Yeah,
it's not amazing. Only for me, but for the people.
Well, and you mention it because in order to build the trust, you personally avail yourself. But when you personally avail yourself, you actually begin to know your team, which makes you appreciate your team. And then when they realize that you appreciate them and they feel appreciated, then they begin to say, I can't be as bad as I think because Mike believes in me.
Correct. Absolutely true.
And then what happens is you don't have to do it alone. Because you start building this foundation of people that they want to walk through fire for this person who personally avails and cares and who sees something in them that they don't always see in themselves. And before you know it, two things happen. You have a huge foundation of people that are bought in and who are helping you not do it alone. And you're getting rid of the malcontents, because what do they tend to do, Mike?
Oh, they self-police. That's leave. Right. They go, this is nonsense.
And when they can't get when they can't get away with their shenanigans that they used to get away with, when they can't be people that don't have integrity, or when they can't triangulate and talk trash about people, when that is no longer acceptable, they get the heck out.
Yes, they do.
Which makes your company even stronger.
Well, what you want to do, and the big red flag, Rock, is drama.
Right.
Some people, they just can't help it. They grew up in a drama world and they just love drama. So if somebody spills a container of milk and it's, you know, the end of the world. And so sometimes you can help those people, but a lot of times you just have to help them find another opportunity.
Yeah.
But drama is a real red flag.
For sure. It's a killer of organizations. And I don't mean drama. Like right now we have a young lady who is, her mom is in hospice and she's not going to make it.
Yeah.
She's not drama. She's going through something that's incredibly difficult. And you know what? We're going to have to cut her some slack for the next couple months.
Sure.
You know, we just are.
Sure.
And we're going to have to be there. And, you know, I was very pleased because I texted her to say, hey, and I sent her some scripture that said, you know, death, where's your sting? And I reminded her that we see life as this, and this is just very fractional. And the thing she said to me is, thank you. I don't know what I would do without my work family. And that is that's what's supposed to happen. So that's not the drama we're talking about. We're talking about, Mike, people being passive aggressive, and I don't like Larry, but I'm not going to tell Larry. I'm going to tell you, Mike, how terrible Larry is. So you go tell Larry.
Please don't talk behind my back.
Well, literally we are talking behind my back.
That's right. But the truth is, that's what many organizations have going on.
Yeah, they breed that.
And it takes real courage to collapse a triangle.
Yeah.
And if you aren't going to do it, you'll never succeed, because it's like putting a cactus in a swamp. You can't live.
You know what I've gotten to the point of doing is, when I am talking, when I feel that something I'm saying could be perceived even as gossip.
Yes.
I will tell the person, hey, Mike, I want you to know this. I'm saying it because I have already said this to Larry, or I'm going next to say this to Larry, so that I let them know there's no triangle here. I'm not gossiping with you. If I've share this with you, it's because I've gotten Larry's permission, or I'm about to go talk,
sure,
about it.
I feel like I'm being triangulated.
Yeah. Larry, you've got a lot of things you've got.
You know who does this very effectively? Mm-hmm. A guy named Dave Ramsey. You may have heard of him, but he won't put up with gossip. Yep. And years ago, I went to a all-day session with actually my team. It was at Northland, and Dave was there, and we spent time. It was kind of a mini entree leadership event, and we talked about gossip and how he deals with it, on his team. And what he said is, I'll bring the person in that the first time, and I'll say, we don't gossip here. And if this continues, the next time we meet, I'm going to let you go.
Yeah.
So get your resume current or stop gossiping.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, Mike brought up a point about working with the team and catching people doing things right.
That's right.
And what he did today was he brought in an example of that.
Yeah, he actually brought us in a physical pad.
You had pads made up that said this, and you had them passed around. Was this like on the front desk, or did everybody have them at their own desk, or how did you work with these?
Well, Larry, that's a great question. And the culture in 1978 was one of triangulation, bad mouthing, negativity, and we were going nowhere fast. And we had a meeting for a week. I think I told you about Mike McManus. He was our facilitator, and we all agreed that we had to change the culture. And anyway, there was two guys that left the company after that week. They quit. They self-policed because they said, this is nonsense. They actually didn't use that word. But so what you do is you get your team together and you say, hey, I'm tired of triangulation, and so I need your help. I know I badmouth Rocky and other people, and I need, when I start that, I want you guys to go, hey, nip it.
Yeah.
So nip it, stop it.
Right.
And then the other thing is, if you're going to continue, then let's get the person that you're, quote, talking, or the situation that you're bad-mouthing.
Right.
Let's get the people involved, and if they're here on campus, fine. If not, get on the phone, and let's get it done.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell you, Larry, I'm going to actually rip one off and give one to you, because Larry, it's an attaboy, because you actually helped us with our segue, which is we were supposed to talk about this, and I forgot all about it, and Larry helped me remember. Caught Larry doing
I'm
something
not being
well.
Triangulated now.
So what you do is you have these pads, and every person on the team, I don't care if they're the warehouse person or the guy cleaning the facility, whatever, everybody gets one. And what I did is I said, starting today, I want you, everybody in this room, to catch people. Could be the UPS delivery guy, whatever. Three a day.
Yeah.
And they're like,
oh, really?
Oh, that's where I started. And it was amazing catching people doing things right.
Yeah.
And so what happened, and I said, when you get one, I want you to put it up on your board. We used to have partitions, and so boy, all of a sudden the capital became, how many pinks did you get?
Yeah.
And if you think about a pink slip, that used to be you're getting terminated.
Right.
So it was kind of a play on words.
And you know what else I'm sure did, Mike, too? If somebody refused to get behind it, if somebody belittled it or badmouthed it, it really was a pretty big, hey, this guy's not going to buy in. And it really, if they weren't going to self-select themselves out, it could lead to a necessary ending.
Sure.
For sure.
Well, and it permeated from the top. Bob Dean and Maxine, his wife, who have both passed away. I remember being on a plane with Maxine coming down from Ithaca, and Bob didn't fly with us because we never allowed, you know, key people to fly together. But she and I were on the plane, and it was a rough ride into Orlando. And when we landed, she pulled out her little pink pad and she handed it to the pilot. She said, I'm
here. Thankful, very thankful.
You I got caught you doing something right. You flew this plane well. And he loved that. And that led to, hey, gosh, tell me your story. And I did. And the pilot's like,
well, this is the amazing thing, Mike, because you say the pilot loved it. And you would think, come on, he's getting paid well. But you walked in today and you talked to Larry and I about a treasure box that you kept. And you gave us a blank pad, but you also gave us some slips that have been filled out about you. And those are probably, what, 20, 30 years old, Mike?
1990.
So think about
1986.
That. Yeah. Think about that. 85. You could put anything in a treasure box. And people normally put gold or money or bonds. You put words, right? Words in a box. So, you know, and you're, by all measure, you're a high achiever. People would say, hey, this guy had an amazing career. He's still doing things that are helpful. But this pink slip, it meant something because you would not have kept it if it didn't. And I often think back of, I had a boss who wrote me a letter when I was leaving for college, and I kept that letter until it literally disintegrated. Like, I don't have it anymore because it fell apart, because it became the thing I went to when I was struggling, when I was having a bad day. And I would pick this letter up, and he said all these great things about who I was and why he admired and my work, you know. And that thing, it was like water in a desert sometimes to me.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you have to realize that a lot of organizations don't encourage people. And I've lived in those organizations too. And, you know, if you don't fill up a pitcher with water, you can't pour water out of it.
Right.
And so one of my cautions, you know, to people that are listening to this that aren't, quote, leaders, is if you're in an organization that doesn't value you and doesn't pour some water into your pitcher, you might need to find a new opportunity somewhere, you know. Ooh. And I can tell you, it takes a lot of courage to do it. And in one instance in my life, I didn't have the courage to do it. And I regret that because I wasted
years
of my life pouring into people. But it's gotta come from the from on high.
Yeah.
But I can also remember Bob Dean and Maxine pouring that into me, and you know, it's like when you give God an inch, he gives you a mile. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
All he wants you to do is be faithful, and he does the rest.
Yeah. Well, and so. I do think that there's something to be, you know, normally when I was younger, I didn't realize this, but when I worked for bosses who would be what I consider to be bad bosses or bosses who didn't build into me, I wish I could go back and I wish I could look at the situation with my wisdom that I've gained.
Yeah, sure.
And say, people give from their overflow.
Correct.
So was this person a bad boss, or was he not getting kind words too?
Yeah.
And could I have given some up in order to maybe jumpstart his tank being filled? So, you know, now maybe not. Maybe he would have still been a jerk. But I don't know, and I didn't try it, and I was quick to assume he was a jerk. But looking back, I think we worked for a company, and he was not a raging river because he was not being filled. He was a stagnant stream.
Sure.
Nobody was building into him. And so he had nothing left over to give to me.
Sure.
You know.
And there, you know, you can have a sick kid. You can have a spouse that's abusive. There's a lot of ways, you know, that affect what you're doing. But I think that you know, as we share all these wonderful words of wisdom, I think what my goal here is to be useful to people. And some of this, I hope, strikes a chord. Yeah. But if you work on Nipit, you break triangulation, you start catching people doing things right. There's two songs that I used to have a Monday morning meeting every week. In the Monday morning meeting, I'd go rolling, 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 keep those doggies rolling. And we'd go through the agenda and we used to track all our potential orders. And then we'd track all our roadblocks, you know, what's stopping us from achieving our goal this week. And I'd set the goals, the mission. Everybody would kind of chime in. Stand up meeting, not a big long thing. Why do that? But, and then
you had a Barbara Streisand song.
I did. And she's
Barbara Streisand.
She is a Broadway lady, among other things. And there's a song she sings, putting it together, bit by bit, piece by piece, putting it together. And every week we'd put it together. We'd put the mission out. What's our goals this week? How are we doing? And that even included people. Hey, my mom's in hospice. You know, can you guys?
Right.
So that was all part of putting it together.
Yeah.
And then we wind up with, okay, so, and we assign tasks, you know, hey, by Wednesday, let's get this done. And then when computers got real good, we'd all track it, you know, first on an Excel spreadsheet. And then,
it's okay.
On an Excel spreadsheet. And then we started using Salesforce and we would track all these opportunities, roadblocks, issues, and it made us very effective and it was fun. And that's the real key. This gets to be fun.
I was just going to say, and it sounds like it's getting fun.
Well, and that's what I was going to say too, because I think like once you build the trust,
yep.
Once you put the work in,
yep.
And then once you begin to look at your people differently and see, wow, these people are amazing. And once they begin to back you up and they help you not do it alone, it becomes fun, right?
Well, and then what happens is you get joy in your heart. And I know this sounds so hokey, but I can tell you, when you're having fun and there's joy and there's trust and there's empowering, you empower people, you give them the tools, the byproduct is you win, you grow, you have fun. And it's really funny because the byproduct then becomes margin, you make money, but it's just kind of like when you exercise, you know, all of a sudden your cholesterol gets better, your blood pressure goes down, bam. But, you know, you do it for a lot of reasons.
Well, you know, there's a quote I love, and it's by Ken Blanchard, who's written a lot of great books.
Yeah, but sure.
This is one of my favorites. And he says, profits are the applause you get for taking care of your people.
Yep.
And so if, you know, at Chick-fil-A, we talk a lot about we value results and relationships. And within Chick-fil-A, we talk about results first because, to be honest with you, for years, Chick-fil-A was really more about relationships. So we had to kind of be reminded, hey, wait, there is this scorecard and we do want to be a success because if we're being good stewards, that is also with our finances. But we never forget that we value both. But I love that statement of profits being the applause for taking care of your people. So
it's so true.
That's right.
And that's why, again, you have to, I think, have a monthly chalk talk and share how you're doing.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, kind of a speedometer. We call it a dashboard. Yep. And I used to go through and do a chalk talk with a dashboard.
Yep. Well, and sometimes your results aren't up and to the right. Sometimes in a down economy, your results could be less loss than your competitors, which still is a gain.
True.
So, you know, these things, again, we're going to be tackling these over the next many, many weeks, and we're going to start transitioning into the why, into the here's some nuts and bolts, the how. And we're going to explain things like Nipit and triangulation and catching people doing things. We're going to really go into depth more with some of those topics. But, Mike, I really do appreciate your thoughts on this topic. So,
well, it's exciting. I love it. I'm an old man and I still love it. It's the game of growing people.
Well, I want to thank everybody for linking up with us today.
Yeah, as always, we want to say, please subscribe to this podcast. We believe we are hopefully having a difference in the world, and we're having a difference because you're learning from our mistakes.
And again, we want to thank you, ACS Creative. That's right. Speaking about the website.
Yeah, they don't play games with your money. They are, they'll do a great job for you.
So, Rocky, until next time, I'm Larry the K, and I'm your ever faithful companion.
And I'm Mike Hodes.
And anyways, we always want to remind you that, you know, we're not sitting here as experts. We're sitting here as fellow travelers on the same journey. And we just believe that it's all about how you serve. Mike said, you do the next right thing. And when you fall, you brush yourself off and do the next right thing. And that's why every week we're going to share a server's journey with you. I'm Rocky DeStefano. I want to thank you for joining us. And together, Mike and Larry and I are asking, are you somebody worth following?